You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Sean, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself to the listeners and tell our listeners why we're talking tonight.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me on. My name is Sean Bjorndal. I am a pharmacist, and I launched a platform back in August called RPH Ally. Think of it as a central hub for all things pharmacy. But the reason why we're talking tonight is because of the most recent launch of the prescriber review, where pharmacists can provide their professional opinions on prescribers, providers. So then when other pharmacists are verifying prescriptions that do not know them, they will have at least a data point to kind of help them out in those situations to make really more informed decisions to better take care of their patients.
Very cool. Bjorndal, that's a cool last name.
It's Viking. My heritage comes from Norway. I like to say Viking because, like you said, it's a cool. It sounds cooler.
That's a lot cooler.
And plus, I am from Minnesota, so I am a Vikings fan. So, tragically, yes.
I always think that my relatives are crazy that have gone to school up at Michigan Tech, which is up on the top of Michigan. But then I forget that there's like a whole country way up there. And Minnesota is the same thing.
Yeah. No, I haven't lived there since 2008. So I've probably lost of that thick blood, as you would say. You know, I'm in California wearing a sweatshirt when it's 65 degrees out. So
is that a Christmas sweatshirt?
Yes. I just got this for Christmas from my wife.
Very nice. My wife and I said that we weren't going to get presents this year for each other, so I stuck by that, but she always fills up our stockings, so that lets her buy a little gift, and she bought for me some really cool soap. I love soap, you know, like the man soap, you know, it's like a brick, it's like square, and it smells like good men smell, you know, and I thought that was really cool, but then I was at work today, and I said, yeah, we weren't buying any presents, but my wife bought me a bar of soap. And when I actually said that, it kind of sounded not real good.
Look, don't read into that one too much, Mike. Come on. I'm sure you smell fine. I'm sure you shower enough.
I guess so. Sean, all right, so the main gateway to your product is going to be an app. People are dealing with it on their phones and things like that, right?
Yes. Yes. Web-based or app. I mean, there. You can log in from your computer, or you can pick up your phone with the app, and you can have a better response than this through the app if you're using your phone. But yeah, it's a web-based app.
You worked for some chains, a few of them for 4 years, I think you were at one of them, and then a couple years at some of the other ones. What are the rules on phones as a chain employee? Is it like a non-issue?
Well, it's been 4 years since I've been in one of those roles at a chain, so I can't say that now, but I don't know a pharmacist that doesn't have their phone on them. I think probably pharmacists can get away with their phones. There's probably more stricter rules, which is probably unfair for technicians. I think a lot of it comes down to probably the pharmacy manager or the pharmacist in charge.
You know, besides workers, there's things like emergency rooms where you would feel like you were going to get sent to prison if you were in an emergency room with your child who broke their leg and they saw your phone. You know, and I used to say no phones because you're going to throw off all the heart monitors and you're going to, you know, mess up the airplanes flying overhead and things like that. But I think everywhere in the hospitals, I think that they've kind of opened that up more. They realize that phones and things do a lot of good, and more so than the potential problems that they thought of.
Probably not that big of a concern if they're not checking everybody's phones to make sure they're off.
I know at our kids' school, they're not supposed to carry phones now.
That's because they are a distraction.
Yeah, and then they do anyways. But when we were kids, we just couldn't have bubble gum, you know, because then you'd put it underneath your seat or something like that. Sean, all right. So give our listeners, walk them through like a scenario with RPH Ally. Walk them through a scenario of what they're going to use it for. And especially as you were talking, and I think I've heard you say before that this was almost your main goal, was to get the opinions of doctors and things like that. What would that storyline be?
It's going to be Mike as a floater pharmacist.
No one's going to hire me as a floater pharmacist, so you better pick someone else. I'll go along with it, just for the sake of the story.
So Mike is a floater pharmacist, wakes up every morning, you know, wanting something better, right? So he picks up, you know, has his coffee, pulls out the RPHLA app, starts reading the live feed, checking up on see what's going on as far as the industry and what people are posting about. Goes to the job section, checks that out, says, okay, I need to find myself a new job. This floating gig is not doing it for me. So he checks the job postings out. Going to be tailored more towards pharmacists. So you want to get out of retail. So you start looking into informatics or, you know, something along those lines. So we already have that categorized for you, the jobs that are, you know, available there. You're also going to go check out the informatics group, because that's where you need to know, how do I break into the informatics? And so you're like, shoot, I got to get to work. So you go to work. First script you checked is, you know, an oxycodone 30 written from the doctor down the street, but you're an hour away from home. You've never filled for this doctor before. So you pull out the RPHLA app, you pull up the prescriber review, you type in the doctor's name, he pulls up, and you see six or seven pharmacists gave him, you know, a 4-star rating. They know this doctor, they have a good relationship with him, he's very responsive. You know, so you feel better because that office is closed. You can't validate if, you know, this patient has a, you know, legitimate doctor-patient relationship, and you don't know the prescriber's habits, but you know that a handful of your colleagues gave him a good rating, that they're comfortable dispensing prescriptions issued by him. So you're going to say, instead of taking that patient and turning them away and saying, I'm sorry, there's something wrong with this prescription, you know, come back tomorrow when the doctor's office is open, you can say, okay, I feel good about this. You know, you run the DORs and the, you know, you vet the prescription, check the PDMP, everything is fine. You now have a data point for the doctor. You're like, okay, here you go. I'm going to dispense this medication to a patient I've never seen and a doctor I've never dispensed for.
That's interesting, because sometimes you can't tell by just looking in the computer to see if the doctor's common or not, because sometimes the doctor might be common or popular, let's say, in the computer system, but you have no idea if everybody has these bad thoughts about him, but nobody has done something about it, or if he's an a-hole that whenever you call their office, they kind of threaten you about, you know, you better fill it or this or that. So the numbers, did you hear my dog very much during this?
No.
So a lot of times the numbers in the computer don't tell you. You want to have the opinion of local people. So that's really cool.
There's really no other way to get any information like that. I mean, there's, if you look at, you know, there will never be a PDMP for doctors, because number one, what would you even do with that information, right? So there's a pain specialist, and that's all, they do a lot of pain medications. So, I mean, how do you look at that and say, well, he does a lot of pain meds, I'm not going to dispense this? Or, you know, like, so it's not like, you know, it's not the same as, it's not apples to apples like you would a PDMP for patients. So, and it's opioids now. What's next? I mean, there's possibly a benzo wave coming that can be just as bad. And benzos could be even harder to get off than opioids.
You look at news that came last week about Walmart pharmacies getting sued because of this doctor stuff. And it's like, I don't know. I've worked a long time in community pharmacy, and I've never really stopped a doctor. I've stopped patients when they're going to a number of different doctors, but I've never just called up a doctor and said, you tipped some arbitrary scale and I'm not going to fill for you anymore. I don't want to let Walmart off the hook, because I have no idea what the story was, but golly, it seems like a hard job for the pharmacist. And we've got a lot of people breathing down the neck of the chain pharmacists. I don't know if it's to fill or not fill, but I suppose you could look at someone like me and say, well, I've got stuff breathing down the neck too of potential patient loss or getting raided by the DEA and personally having handcuffs put on me and that kind of stuff. But all in all, I think I have less pressure than a chain pharmacist does in making a personal decision like that. It almost seems like the chain would have given more guidance. Well, and maybe they were supposed to. Maybe that's what they didn't do. I have no idea about the suit.
That's going to be an interesting one to see the details come out on that. Following that pretty heavy, just because, especially with the tool that I build. I mean, has there ever been a time where you didn't fill a prescription because you knew that the doctor maybe not writing legitimate prescriptions?
I've stopped for that, you know, or if they said there were stolen blanks, or if they said that the doctor no longer had a DEA license or something like that. But I could really see using your tool, because all I've got to go on now is the doctor still has his license. You know, he's licensed to do it. The prescription's legal. He saw the patient. If the patient's not using too much, I mean, you have all these inklings of what you should maybe do. And certainly if it's not legit, you don't do it. But if it's legit, you have all these inklings. But it sure would be nice to have, instead of just my own inklings, it would be nice to have the thoughts of 100 other pharmacists in the area to say, you know, we had these inklings and most of us just called them and said we weren't doing it, blah, blah, blah. Even that, I think, would give me more comfort to know that 10 other pharmacists have called the office and just said, we're not doing this. It's like, yeah, well, I'm going to do that too then.
It's more like the strength in numbers, like the community crowdsourcing. I mean, it's so simple. It's almost kind of one of those things where it's like, well, it's not, you know, mind-blowing technology, right? It's just a simple idea. I'm more of a people's guy anyways. You know, I do better working with people. And, you know, it's just kind of tapping into that, you know, that personal connection, that human experience in the form of a review, right? I mean, you take out all the negativity and just keep it straight to yes, no type of thing. You know, 3 and 4 is good. 1 and 2 is like, I don't feel comfortable, or I have concerns. You know, if you give like that's how we built it, was 1, 2, 3, and 4 stars. You know, the 1 and 2 would be detractors, the 3 and 4 would be promoters.
When I read that earlier, I'm glad you didn't have 5 stars, because you don't want anybody picking 3, because it's like, what the hell does that do for me now?
No, exactly.
That everybody just picked a 3, you know? So it's good you just did 1 through 4.
Yeah, and that was, you know, honestly, Mike, it was, you know, we dialed back from the original design just because I had it way too complicated. And it finally came, you know, just like you said, you either do or you don't. You know, you're either comfortable or you're not. So, but you still need more than just a thumbs up, thumbs down type of review, because, you know, when you start adding these together, a good doctor will fall in between a 3 and a 4.
Is the user going to just give a rating, or are there, not that there should be, because I can understand that some of this is for simplicity's sake and so on. Are there any different categories, and is there a comment section? What went through your head when deciding that? And again, I'm not implying there should be, because it's a mixture of simpleness versus how much information is going to be helpful, you know?
Really, I want to protect the pharmacist at the end of the day. So that's why they're anonymous. And we took out the comment section. I mean, we could always plug the comments back in based off feedback. And we could still do it anonymously. But it was just like you said, for simplicity's sake, we started with just the reviews themselves, or the stars themselves, the rating score.
Does California have do they have C5s with the pharmacist discretion? Do they have like codeine cough syrups the pharmacist can fill?
Honestly, I've never dispensed that in my entire career. I've never had anyone even ask to come up and just, you know, dispense that. So I can't speak to that, but
they have it.
They have it, yeah.
And that's baloney. I remember a guy got arrested in Grand Rapids years ago. I mean, this is 30 years ago, because he gave too much of this stuff out. And it's like, they do that, but they don't, you know, they don't give really any guidance, but then they want to clamp down on it. Seems like a screwy thing.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel about the corresponding responsibility piece too. You have this legislation that says the pharmacists have the equal corresponding responsibility as to the prescriber, right? And then you also have, you know, the boards of pharmacies, you know, you still have to take care of the patient. So you can't inhibit, or you can't block a patient from receiving the medication. Then you're in this predicament where you don't feel comfortable filling this prescription. you know, you've never dispensed a prescription issued by this doctor. And it's like, okay, you call the office and it's kind of shady. The staff answers unprofessionally and doesn't really give you the information you're really looking for, or, you know, they won't pass it over to the prescriber. You know, it's like, so even if you take this information down and write, yep. I mean, that's, if you talk to an inspector, just writing down that you spoke to Mike at the office and yep, it's for this patient. I mean, that's not going to stand in court if that is an illegitimate prescription. Pharmacies are calling doctor's offices every day. And it's like, you know, sometimes we are a nuisance because pharmacists like to live in the black and white. Their whole world's in gray, but we like to get it as black and white as we can.
You said the term is corresponding. Corresponding as in they both have the responsibility.
Yeah.
That's not fair to pharmacists. Here's what I think, Sean. I think that the AMA has put us in this position. Why not? Why not take some of the burden off of them and give it to somebody who will take some of it? I don't know. How much did you have to research about things that our PH ally might say about a doctor? Like, let's say someone says something, and I know that whole policy 32, or what the hell is that number? Anyway, it's something saying that basically the phone is not editorial. It's more like a vehicle for other people's thoughts. So they're not your thoughts. You're just a conglomerate of gaining other people's thoughts. Do you know how far something could go, or what kind of trouble could you get into? And I don't want you to invite trouble by someone listening to this and saying, oh yeah, let's get Sean in trouble for that. But do you know where that would go?
Yeah, no, I have a very good friend and kind of mentor that's a JD pharmacist, you know, and I talked to him at length about this, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, there's not a lot there. Like you said, it's not our PH ally's opinion. These ratings are not the opinion. It's just the vehicle. We have the reporting to really have our defense with claims that this tool is inhibiting a particular prescriber's patients from getting their meds, right? I mean, it all comes back to the audit trail. When was it checked? You know, because we still have to track that. It is anonymous, but we can track when someone sees it, because all of the data comes from pharmacists having that attestation that they're going to be truthful and providing us with their responses. Because, you know, there's also, we put a survey in there. Let's say I'm looking at Mike Kelzer, and I don't know him. You know, he's a prescriber and
he's an asshole.
He's
let me just beat you to the punch.
And so you check on it, but we have a survey that pops up that asks, you know, it asks some questions for feedback, right? So we want to know, did the review help you dispense the meds? Did you have to ask, or, you know, did you have to like pause and ask for further clarification, you know? Or were you just reviewing the doctor? I don't have the list on me right now, but it's important that we capture that feedback from the pharmacist to show how the tool is helping with patients and outcomes, and also from a defensive position saying, you know, we have this data. This doctor wasn't even rated, or we only had 5 pharmacists check the rating. Like, how are we inhibiting any patients from getting medications issued by this provider? So going back to the original question, I've had many conversations at length with very intelligent, smarter people than myself that are into law, and, you know, and there's already a lot of reviews out there already, you know, so it's not like this is anything brand new, right? This is just a more of a focus strictly for pharmacists, privilege only to pharmacists to utilize this, access to this. So it's not really, that is a fear, but it's not something that I lose sleep over at night.
What's your closest competition? Is there any competition with a pharmacist only review of physicians?
I'm not aware of one.
I'm not either.
No. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where we would be aware of it, right?
Just a Google search would make you aware of it.
I did a lot of research before I even took the plunge and talked my wife into, you know, taking out the savings for everything, right? Like, and kind of the same idea I had for just the overall RPH Ally platform. Just to kind of better connect the pharmacy nation, right? It's really, you know, I struggled, and there's going to be a lot of, you know, there's 315 to 350,000 pharmacists out there, right? And, you know, how many are really savvy on LinkedIn? Not that many, right? There's a lot of people that are, like I said earlier, that are not gaining some bits and pieces of knowledge that they could just to be better plugged into the profession. And it's like, we kind of need that in our own space. It's unique. It's niche enough to where it's a valid product. It just haven't got there yet. We're just still climbing, I guess.
LinkedIn, first of all, I've got a group that I actually started back in 2009. So this is like 11 years ago, and it's called Independent Pharmacy Owners on LinkedIn. And it's all right. I knew I kind of wanted a platform for something, and I never found a good reason for it because it never had very good feedback. I mean, LinkedIn got a lot better a few years ago when Microsoft bought it, but up until then, there wasn't many medical professionals on it, hardly at all. And I haven't baited it. I haven't said like, hey, vote on this, or what do you guys think of this? I mean, you can do a lot better to get involvement on things, which I haven't done. So I just let it brew for a while, and now I'm using it mainly to get my podcast advertised on there. But I think part of the reason that pharmacists won't use it is because, one, is LinkedIn groups, they were pretty rotten for a while. Secondly is people don't trust who's on there, because I let anybody on there. I don't vet them. Third is, well, probably because it can't be anonymous. There's a lot of reasons. But then I've talked to some people that I've talked to Deborah, who was on the show half dozen shows ago or something, and she runs a Facebook group. But their biggest problem is vetting, is knowing who's a pharmacist or not. And she actually said there's like some spies on there. And I was trying to get her to go real deep and give me like a James Bond story, but she just said they were spies, you know, people who maybe used to be a pharmacist. Talk about the vetting. Is that difficult to do?
Yes and no. I mean, it's easy because we have a pharmacist license, you know, and so that's a requirement for the prescriber view for getting into the RPHLA in general is that pharmacist license. So we validate that every time someone signs up.
Do you actually have to do something with that? Can you run it through something?
We just go to the state board's website.
Oh, you do that, huh?
Yeah, to see if it's active. You know, I mean, we have, there's been plenty of folks who've tried to join that either aren't pharmacists or their license has become inactive. So it's, you know, we don't let them into the community. So that's the first piece of it.
So you got some spy stories.
Nothing cool. They're not cool spy stories, but
do they know that they ran out, do you think, and they're trying to get in just to be part of it, or
no idea?
Make something up.
Well, I mean, there's been people. I mean, if you think of big pharma, there's a lot of,
oh right,
you know, big pharma. There's a lot of people who work in pharma that are not pharmacists, right? So
yeah,
there's been you know, individuals that have some sort of health solutions email, you know, where you go and you can't find them.
Do you think you have people putting in fake numbers?
I wouldn't think so. You brought up a funny point earlier about the spies. I mean, us pharmacists are nerds, right? I mean, I'm proud of that. We think differently. I don't know too many people that would want to get into a pharmacy group, you know, that aren't pharmacists. I don't know what your spies do on your other platforms, but it's like, honestly, it's pretty boring stuff if you're not a pharmacist.
At the pharmacy, we have like Norman Rockwell calendars, you know, and they're for free, you know, and people love those. And to some of the people, I made the joke that I said, I'm Mr. July in the middle, and then they just put it right back down on the counter and walk out. So no one's trying to break into pharmacy. How about the pharmacists, though, that their license expire? Maybe they just want to kind of like hang out and be part of it still, but they're not active anymore. You've come across some that are not active anymore, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. And they're not accepted in.
What do you think their deal is?
I mean, there's a lot of pharmacists that are burnt out, right? They found something else to do.
But they still want to poke around?
I've only had one of those that had an expired license. It was legit. It was licensed. I looked up, but it was inactive. So only one so far.
So you look at the license. That'll do it, or do you have to do anything else? Will that pretty much capture it?
Phase one, we're just looking at the license. Down the road, we have a company, once we grow, that future state, we will be having a company that has your background, where it will ask you security questions about, did you live on this street, or this street, that sort of thing.
To prove that it's you.
Yep. Yeah, that's future state, but right now we're just checking license.
They'll say something like, here's five street names, and then some of them, it'll be none of the above, right? So you can't even guess. It'll let you know. I come from a family of 12 kids, and two of my siblings want the worst for me, and they've taken legal action against me. They want the worst. So, I have a lot of people that don't like me, but I probably only have two people that are really like out to get me, that would really want to damage me. And that's one of my brothers and one of my sisters. And they've got these questions on things. It's like, where were you born? And who was your kindergarten teacher? And all these things. It's like, those are the only two people that are out trying to get me. And they know all this stuff. So let's come up with some better questions than these personal things on these passwords. That's number one. But then I had one a few years ago. It was like, who did you take to prom? I think it was. Who did you take to prom? And high schools now, they've got 3 years of grades where you can go to prom. And then there's homecoming, and then there's swirl. And, you know, someone like me, that a girl couldn't stand being around for more than a couple months, I had a different date at all of them. And so how did you know who your prom date was?
You've had that question?
Yeah, I got it from a bank. Who was your prom date?
Yeah, no, I remember a couple prom dates.
Dave Letterman years ago, he said he had a hard time dating in high school. He said he went to prom and he had to take his cousin to prom. He had such a hard time finding a date. And then Dave said, I was embarrassed, and he was embarrassed. I ain't no genius, but I'm assuming there's more avenues out there to gather pharmacists together for talking and things like that. Not so much, though, when it's vetted, because you don't know who to trust. So the vetting's a big deal. But I'm imagining that your inclination that you first had about your first thought was really the doctor rating on this, right?
Correct.
It almost seems like, to me, that that is so strong that you could almost focus purely on that, unless the vetting is strong enough. Because the vetting is a big deal, because it's hard to know whom to trust when you're online. So that's a big deal. But I think really strong is the doctor thing. Let me play devil's advocate. Why did you not lead with that, saying, we're going to be the doctor one that does, you know, the stuff we talked about, versus we're going to have a community of pharmacists?
Great question. And it was funny, my developer actually, he asked the same thing. He's like, well, I see it two ways. You have the connecting piece and you have the prescriber review. And he asked, you can only choose one. So do you want to go with the prescriber review, or do you want to go with the connecting piece first?
He was hypothetical.
For simplicity, you know, not to boil the ocean, whatever, right? One of those corporate terms that I love so much.
You know, every year they have a new one. You know, I never heard that one. Boil the ocean. All right, so that's a good one.
So you know, you kind of laid it out. You know, it's like, go this path or this path. So, and he asked me, if the prescriber review fails and sinks and doesn't take off, then what? Then you pack up your bags and quit? And I was like, no. That's why I wanted to go with the community piece, the connected piece first, because there's a lot more value in that we can do as a profession just with the connecting piece. Then you can start pulling in journals. You can pull in, we have like a news aggregator that I'm not totally happy with, because we, you know, pharmacy news doesn't aggregate well. Like, you can't pull it in nicely. But then, you know, future state, if you start bringing in all the news streams for pharmacy, you know, and that's another place where they would actually post their stories, it would be a lot cleaner. We are working on some pharmacist metric tools. You know, think of myself as, you know, a corporate pharmacist for so many years, right? I've worked for three chains, And the metrics I had to meet, you know, whether they're fair or not, it was pretty hard to be, you know, like I thought I was a good pharmacist, right? My patients loved me. They kept coming back. You know, they would be sad when I left. Like there's no metric for that, right? But my waiting times were bad. My verified by promise time was bad. So like those are poor metrics. They, you know, that makes me look like a bad pharmacist, though I know I'm not. I'm there to take care of the patient. So like right now we're building other tools that we can plug in to where it's like, you know, these pharmacists are going to be able to take these metrics with them from job to job or throughout their career, just to kind of put on CVs and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do with the platform itself. I mean, the platform is easy, but it's the way technology works where you can just plug in the APIs and you can connect stuff. And, you know, that's where it is at with the platform, you know, with the, whether the prescriber review is successful or not, it's like, we're still going to continue pushing on.
You'll still have a nice base built up because it seems to me like that base will rise at a steady rate. It seems to me like the prescriber thing, if it's hot, could really take off. But if it doesn't really take off, you've got this rising base already from the bottom that's kind of steadily coming up.
Honestly, I thought it was going to be a skyrocket because I thought it was so cool. but then you hit reality and it's like, you know, getting the word out there. It is, like you said, a slow rise. I had a business consultant for a while and, you know, she really tried to, you know, teach me that this is what, you know, like when I was in the design phase, the building phase, you know, that was the easy part, right? It was, and that was really the fun part. She's like, once you get it out there, that is where it becomes tough. You have to have your pitch deck dialed in and this and that. And I didn't believe her. It's like, you want to go to advertise on social media, it's going to cost $6 to $10 per member. And I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not true. Because it's like, this is pharmacy. We are niche. All of that, what she said in the very beginning, when I was, you know, still building, still figuring things out, was how hard it is to be the market. You know, even if you have the right product market fit, like there's still a lot of things that have to happen in order to get it to really take off to where, to by design. So that's probably been one of the biggest struggles, is just getting the word out. And really at the end of the day, it's new. So how's it going to help you, Mike? How's it going to help you today? You know, and that's the piece. It's the chicken and the egg, right? It's like, you know, that's been the biggest struggle.
We'll think of stuff at the pharmacy to do, different programs or products or things like that. And one thing I always have to tell myself is people are already getting by without my great idea. It's not like I created oxygen. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They're already getting by without my idea. Now, here's another one. Let's say that I come in and I say, I'm going to build this pharmacy here because this area needs to be served. It's like, what? Don't you think anybody's getting medicine here already? You think this is the first time that someone, you know, has taken a pill? You know, so people are already getting served. And so I think that's a struggle for all of us when we do something. They're getting served, and how can you help them? What's that other hole we can fill? It takes some time, probably.
I'm still glad I did it because it's still growing. Like I said, if the prescriber review sinks, it's like we have other stuff coming that we can easily plug in, and it's like throwing darts, right? I don't want to say the prescriber review is like throwing darts, but because I truly believe in that, if the pharmacists band together and started building that data to really help each other out. But also like with this other stuff that we're building with building metrics for pharmacists to take with them throughout their career, like that could be something that could be hot.
That's what I wanted to comment on, because when I talked to Chad from When I Work, which is a cool scheduling program, we had talked for a while in the podcast about how it used to be that college was the only way that you could prove your tenacity. It's like, all right, I don't care what you studied in college. I don't care what you studied. I don't care what your grades were. But what I want to see, what I know from a college person, is that they were able to sign up for college on time. They were able to live in a dorm. They could move in, move out. They could take the summer off. They could go back. They could stick it out. They could finish their term papers. You know, all this stuff that gave them these metrics. So what When I Work's idea is instead of just using college for that, why don't we build into when I work some things like, what programs have they learned at a certain job? Do they show up on time? You know, what's their attendance? How long have they been there? All these metrics that only college could really do that before, because you didn't have ways to talk to all the old employees and things like that. So what can be recorded that college used to do outside of there? I think that's really cool for your program. You know, some people have been out in the field for 10, 15, 20 years, and they're collecting a lot of those proof of character or proof of tenacity that college proved before. But what really do they have left, especially if they're moving jobs, and especially if they got maybe a manager who's an a-hole that's not going to give them a good review when your new company calls and stuff like that? So what can you put into a program like yours that you can move with you, and actually literally move with you on a phone that you can show to someone at a interview?
No, and it would be, you know, being able to, you know, extract reports and things like that for whatever you build, whatever you want to build and capture for yourself, that you can put on a CV, you can put on a resume, you know, to help you at your next interview if needed, or things like that. We're still building that, so I don't want to get too deep into that one.
I know you said you had a developer and so on, so you had to basically hire a developer, and I'm assuming you didn't have computing skills to build, right? So you hired all this, and you had to find it. Finding it's the main thing, and making sure you got the right people, right?
And I went through, I think, three different developers before I landed with Mark, the guy who does all that for me now.
Interviewing them or actually hiring them?
Well, the developers are kind of funny, at least the ones I've worked with, because, you know, it kind of starts out like you're courting, you're like dating, right? And, you know, you get on a few calls and, you know, I have my deck that show them and kind of what I want to do, have my requirements laid out.
Your deck is like they use like on a animation. You kind of just jot down some different pages that you might like and stuff on your program.
It'd be really fun to show you what my original wireframe deck looked like, because I'm not that great at making PowerPoints, right? It's not pretty. But yeah, and so it was, you know, you meet for a while, start, you know, tell them what you need, lay out all the requirements, they go back, they work on it, come back, kind of talk about estimations and things like that, how they work. And the first guy I probably talked to for about a month, like every week we were working, and then all of a sudden it came time to a point to pull the trigger, and it was just kind of one of those things where I got put, like, I felt like I was cornered, and I'm like, I shouldn't feel like I'm cornered. Like I want to hire you. Right. And I was like, all right, that's, then I ended up talking to one of my old bosses who, you know, had a guy that did some developing for him, and, you know, he was great. I wanted to hire him.
Go back on that cornered. What were you feeling, and what was happening that, cause I hate that feeling. What was happening though, that you felt cornered?
Getting back to your StatMRX talk you had, you said, partners suck.
Yeah, partners suck. He didn't take the bait.
No, you tried really hard. It was really funny. Anyways, but that's what it came. And it was really going to be, you know, like the cheapest route for me would be to partner with these guys. There was two guys, partner with them, and then, and have them do all the developing. And I would basically, you know, and all of a sudden they came back with what they wanted in like this partnership. And I was like, nah, no, thank you. You know, it's like, I know pharmacy, you know, developing, right? It's like, let's keep that separate. And I'm going to kind of say like what I need you to do. Right. And it didn't feel like it was going to be too much push and pull type of thing.
All of a sudden they wanted to marry you and you haven't even held their hand yet. They wanted a big piece of the pie, and they probably weren't going to do that for free. They probably were going to charge you. And then also they wanted a piece of the pie.
You know, I didn't feel comfortable with that deal.
Good for you. Run from that, right?
Yep. And then the second developer was referred to me by one of my old bosses, and a great guy, very well experienced. You know, he's been developing for 30 plus years, has a great team, but just way too expensive, right? And it was kind of like, well, sorry, I'd love to hire you, but you know, and it wasn't at the idea stage, and that, you know, like he kept talking about the minimal viable product. He taught me a lot about really the development side of it, gave me a lot of the lingo I needed to use, you know, which was great. You know, but at the end of the day, I couldn't afford them, and I couldn't sell them on the idea of bootstrapping it for me, right? Like, he'd been around long enough. He had seen, you know, too many apps and too many products die. He's like, I can't do this without, you know, at least the MVP going first. So
bootstrapping would have been
him building it and be like him just being like you said, like taking on some partnership and him worrying about all the labor of the building and the development piece of it.
So that's interesting. So in that case, you would have taken some of that, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
But so the one guy was like pressing too hard and this guy wouldn't do it. Yeah. So you're trying to find your like Goldilocks place. And that's what learning's all about, right? Definitely. I mean, you didn't know.
No.
You didn't know this.
No idea. No, it was really funny because I thought I was going to have to build this for a lot more than what it actually costs. I thought I was going to have to put in like $1 million to get something built, right? You know, and I literally had no clue how much stuff costs because even when I work with developers on previous jobs, like that's not my money. That's corporate money, right? You really don't. You know, you don't see the bill at the end of the day, you know. So yeah, and then finally, I was kind of like your previous story for, you know, going through college and things like that. Because I had a buddy that was horrible at going through college, but he was, you know, horrible grades. But yet he's like some VP of some biotech company, right? Just because he knows how to talk to people. And he referred me to a guy that made an app for him, who is my current developer, Mark. And he said, hey, this guy built an app for me for, you know, reaching out and kind of whatever they did in that space. And, you know, I had a couple of meetings with him and he's great, you know, and reasonable. And he really believed in the product itself. So he was really happy, or I was really happy to have kind of met him. Like you said, what did you call that? My
Goldilocks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's just it was kind of funny. Like, I mean, I got to know a bunch of good people just trying to find my way to this point, you know, so.
Was that all part of it, that if you were to have done it all again, was that like, oh, I can't believe I wasted this and that? Or was that like all a good thing, you know, like meeting those two guys and learning that? And did that affect you in a bad way or was that okay?
That was okay. I mean, I was like, you know, like it wasn't a fun position to be in. And I'm not, you know, and I'm not very good at being mean. You know, it's like, you know, so it's like, you know, having had that conversation of like, hey, you know what, I'm going to go find somebody else. I'm going to go work with somebody else. I mean,
that's hard to do.
That was a tough conversation.
That's hard to do. So Sean, then you find that Goldilocks and you get that and then you just start, you just send him stuff and he sends it back to you and you do a little edit here and there, right? And you just kind of move forward.
Very slow process, but yes, you know,
slower than that.
Yeah.
That was the short version.
Yeah, no, it's funny because it's like I've often found I keep getting reminders that I'm not very patient, right? But whenever you're building something or doing something like this, it just takes a lot of time. And it's been almost 2 years now since I first thought of it, like doing something like this.
When I was like 7 years old, I was in Florida and I was at one of those, I've told this before, but I was at one of those. It might have been Carousel of Progress or something put on by GE or something like that, where they sing the same song so often you're going to barf if you hear it again, you know? And so, but at the end you walk up and there's this TV and I saw it was like the City of Tomorrow and they had two people talking on the phone, but on a TV to each other. And I thought, oh my gosh, if that ever happens in real life, that's going to be the future when people can look at each other like we're doing right now, because we're, for the listeners, Sean and I are on screen with each other, but we don't, you know, this is just an audio podcast. But we've made it to the future now because we can talk and we can see each other while we're talking. Do you have like a future thing like that in your mind for the company? Like you've dreamt that when this happens, you've made it? Or is that kind of a changing thing all along?
Well, it's definitely changed. You know, it's definitely changed because it started as a prescriber review, and then all of a sudden it comes into like a social media connecting piece for pharmacists, right? But I honestly think it's changed again to be more that, you know, like strip away social media. Like, yeah, there will be a social media channel, within the platform. There'll always be that there because people live and breathe social media these days. But it really, like the future state is that central pharmacy hub where you have, you pick a channel. I mean, if you're in the pharmaceutical industry, it's like you go to that channel and, you know, you're getting whatever resources you need within that channel. Everything is plugged in into informatics. I like that one. That one's very hot right now. But
yeah, that's hot.
But it's like, you know, you want to get into that and there's a whole bunch of different resources within that channel. You know, I think of the future state of RPHL as you turn on your TV and you know, like we stream with Roku, right? So it's like, what are we watching tonight, right? And it's like, what are we doing? Are we listening to pharmacy podcasts? Are we looking at, you know, trying to find journal articles for some sort of research that we want to do? Or are we just going to go to social media? Or are we going to go check out the jobs scene, things like that? So it's more, you know, but it's really just tailored to pharmacy, you know, to where you and I don't have to learn how to use another platform. Everything's going to be streamlined for you, where we can stay plugged in, see what's going on, and really try to make ourselves better as a professional from learning from others.
The end goal of a company changes, and that's beautiful. That happens, you know, all the time. I was just talking to a kid at work who now has a Bluetooth speaker thing, and it was from a company that just always made guitar things before, and now they're into the Bluetooth speaker thing, so things change all the time. When you were thinking about this, did you ever have a point where you said, if I do that, I've made it? Whether it was, and don't give me numbers, I'm not talking numbers here, but was there a point in your head where you said, if I get so many subscribers or I make so much money, was there anything like that where you said, this is going to be my goal? Or was it always just been like, I'm climbing the mountain and I'll just keep climbing and see where it leads me?
If we get the full Pharmacy Nation on the platform, you know, and I will know honestly if I'm on the right track if I can get one of my classmates, Nate, to sign up and have an account.
Now that's interesting. We got to talk about Nate here a second.
Yeah.
Now, does Nate already know that he is your goal, or is it the opposite of that where you just want to see if naturally Nate signs up without knowing that he's your goal?
He knows it now. He's I've tried to convince him enough times to just get on there, test it out, help me out. Nope. You know, he thinks it's just pure social media, which he doesn't have one social media account, right?
And you probably have an agreement that he's not going to do it just to flatter you. He's going to do it when he would truly do it without knowing you.
Well, now I think it's at the point where he'll never do it just because it's me. Right
now he's not gonna do it anymore. Oh, now you're screwed.
I know. Hopefully there comes a point where he's like, all right, I just have to do it, because it's all the rave, right, for us pharmacists. That's what I need to get it to, for him to want to sign up, not just out of spite for not signing up.
It's almost like there's three reverse psychologies going on here, kind of thing. Yeah. Right now that Nate knows.
Yeah.
Oh. Do you think Nate won't do it for a while just because he knows he's the marker?
Yeah, he knows. And I mean, he'll probably log in with Justin's ID. One of the other guys from my classmate. Oh. Not from my class.
Were you guys buddies in college, or yeah, was this the guy that like gave you a swirly or something?
No, no, we were comrades.
You must have told him this at some point. This was your goal. I mean, he must have said, it's not going to work, I never want to do that.
He actually was the opposite. Like, even before, like when I first sent him, I think it was, I didn't tell him until after, I think he's part of the beta test. So I threw it at my classmates from North Dakota State, you know, just to get them to get in there, start tinkering with it, see if they like it. And I think that was the first time that he had heard about it, you know, but I knew he wouldn't like it regardless. I did not expect him to even sign up, right? But then...
Because of social media.
Because of social media type thing, yeah. But he called me and he started giving me props and started saying how cool of an idea it was. And he started giving me, you know, all this great feedback just from checking out the website and whatever it was, whatever I had. He loved the name. And so, I mean, that was great to hear that from him. Because I didn't go to him for that very reason, because he's always been a tough critic, like even in pharmacy school.
You have to be careful about who you tell stuff in life, you know? I'm learning that more and more. And you knew that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great friend. I just knew that he wasn't the guy that I was going to go to early on. But now it's become, like you said, it's like a reverse psychology type of thing where it's like, I don't even know anymore. And you could never sign up just out of spite. So I'll never feel like I've ever accomplished my goal, you know? So
you'll never know. You'll be like on your deathbed and you'll call your friends around and you'll have like 3 hours left to live and Nate will come by, you know, and he'll say, check your sign-up log, and with all your might, you'll lift up your 3-ounce phone and you'll pull it to your face, you know, and you'll look and Nate will be signed up and it'll be like the end of Inception. Do you ever see that Inception with, you know, where the dreams, there's like three layers of dreams, right?
Leonardo, right?
Leonardo. Yep. And at the very end, the top is spinning, you know, and there'll be a movie of you with Nate signing up for it. And you'll just like let out this blood curdling scream because you won't know if he liked it or you were dying. And that was his gift to you.
That is awesome.
Well, now, Sean, you better pick a different goal after this discussion.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Now that's all changed. Now it's got to be something else.
Back to the whiteboard.
Back to the whiteboard on what success means. Well, gee, Sean, I wish you all the best. It's really cool what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Mike. No, I appreciate you having me on here, number one, because this is, I've always heard pharmacy is a small world. And, you know, we've heard it over and over again. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of buying, I mean, that's where I'm throwing in all my eggs into the pharmacy is a small world, you know, and definitely your podcast is going to definitely help get that word out there. So much appreciated.
Yeah, my pleasure. Podcasting is cool for that. You know, it allows a place, I think, to talk about the goods of pharmacy and talk about the bads of pharmacy, but be able to do that all in one conversation and then just let people kind of listen and make some decisions for themselves instead of, you know, the news trying to put them into one camp or the other. Well, Sean, golly, best wishes on stuff. We'll be following.
Sounds great, Mike. I'll keep you posted on the progress as well. Appreciate it.
Just don't rate pharmacists on there, okay? If you rate pharmacists, don't let people look at the lowest ratings because there's no reason I have to be on top of every list, you know?
Noted, Mike. Noted.
Thanks a lot, Sean. It was a pleasure.
Yes. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.